Then agenda paper 10B is the comment and letter analysis of a proposed amendment to clarify in paragraph 28C of IFRS 8 to make explicit that a reconciliation of the total of the reportable segment assets to the entity assets should be disclosed for a particular segment if segment assets are reported in accordance with paragraph 23 of IFRS 8. So this amendment is just to promote consistency with paragraphs 23 and 28D of IFRS 8. This is just a clarification. Right? There was no big objection. Well, there was no objection at all with this proposed amendment. So we are recommending you to recommend the ISB to go ahead with this proposed amendment.
And the proposed amendment is just the words added to 28C?
Yes.
This is Sandy. I don't like that amendment because I think that I'd actually prefer that D not have it too, but I think that if you have reportable segments that you're giving to the chief operating decision maker, I think the assets for reportable segments are important if you want to look at return on assets as an example. So I don't agree with the change. That's my opinion.
Scott?
I agree with the proposed change. The only thing I wanted to mention in paragraph 22 regarding the comments about those who said wait till the post-implementation review, we say we disagree. This issue is self-contained. We said that about 10A as well from those who said, you know, wait till post-implementation. It strikes me that really just about any change we want to make to a standard is self-contained if we contain it. So I'm not sure that's a wonderful explanation for not waiting for the post-implementation review, and maybe this, you know, is something we need to think about a little broader. And, you know, when do we wait for post-implementation review and when do we not? Maybe the answer is, you know, in general, we don't wait. You know, it would be the rare thing that we decide to wait. But clearly, the respondents here, you know, seem to think the other way, that in general you ought to wait, and so you're doing something unusual by jumping the gun.
Sunny, the way in which we are approaching both the post-implementation review and the work at the Interpretations Committee is that we wouldn't see the work on the post-implementation review as holding up or preventing the progression of work at the Interpretations Committee. So our default position is if we see a need to amend a standard that is subject to post-implementation review, then we would go ahead and address that need as we see it when we see it.
To me, it's a size test. The American expression would be bigger than a bread box, which nobody else need understand. But if we decided that we wanted to propose to the board that they adopt amortization of goodwill, I think a lot of us would say maybe that ought to wait for the post-implementation review. As desirable as some people might be of it, that's a pretty big bite. And so I would say, now, that's an awfully rough test, but that would have been how I would have thought about it. And the difficulty with 8 is it's hard to see much in 8 that would ever rise to that level.
Well, the suggestion made by Krupp would probably rise to that level because they're basically saying, you know, change the whole way you do, you pick segments. All right, that's fine.
Sandy, with regard to you're saying that you would not add the language to C, are you I'm not sure what the implication of that is. Are you saying
that
you'd add
that you would take out the reconciliation of assets unless they were reported to the chief operating decision maker, right now they're required even if they're not reported to the chief operating decision maker. That's how I read this. So now you take it out. So if you were calculating, say, a return on assets by segment, you won't have that information.
Denise, is that consistent with your understanding?
Well, I understand that if they are reportable, in accordance with paragraph 23, then you have to provide a reconciliation according with this paragraph. I think, frankly, this amendment, and we said it at the last meeting, that this is just an unintended consequence and it's just a mistake when they amended this paragraph that they forgot to amend 28C.
I think the proposed amendment is consistent with the overall approach in IFRS 8, which is to provide information to users based on what is provided to the chief operating decision maker. And what this is attempting to say is to look, if this information is not presented to the chief operating decision maker, we're not going to require the reconciliation of segment assets to be presented in the financial statements. Whereas if it is provided to the chief operating decision maker, then you should provide that reconciliation.
Mm-hmm. Tricia?
But then wouldn't this ending language need to be added to A and B as well, A, B, and E as well?
Sandy, I think you're right. In a sense, the language isn't even needed because take A, for example, which says you provide a reconciliation of the total of the reportable segment's revenues to the entity's revenues. The standard doesn't require them to report revenues unless they report it to the chief operating decision maker. So, in a sense, the same language we're adding to C should be added to all of them. It was put in as a clarification, I think, because people do tend to report revenue and these other measures, but they don't usually provide the assets. And I think there were some regulators that were saying you had to provide the reconciliation anyway. So it's a clarification.
I would think internally that my experience has been that it's more likely that the chief operating decision maker will get assets as opposed to liabilities. So I took D as meaning it's less likely that they'll have D, so we should add D, but we should add the exception.
Well, D already says
that most segment liabilities want the assets. I think they want liabilities too. I think most of them are reported, but my concern. Sorry for the background noise. My concern is that you may be taking away something that currently exists that people find useful. But I haven't surveyed or asked that question. I just think that if you're going to say that that's the thing to be added, then you have to add it to all or you have to change the lead-in.
Are you suggesting that what we really ought to do is that the beginning of 28 should read, an entity shall provide reconciliations of all of the following if reported in accordance with paragraph 23. And then it would be all inclusive.
Yeah, I don't like that answer because I think that assets are important, but I think if you're going to be consistent that needs to be done.
I've got Bert is first in line, then Denise, and then Michael.
But I guess then you lose even more information, don't you? If you now it says that A, B, and E are mandatory even if they are not separately reported to the chief operating decision maker. You have to reconcile them. If you add the notion to paragraph 23, then A, B, and E would also be lost if not reported to the chief operating decision maker. And I think that worsens the situation that Sandy is describing for.
Okay. Dumb idea on my part. I retract it. Pat, did you still want to be in on this?
Oh, no. I said what I needed to say.
Denise?
No, I can't.
Charlotte?
23 says that you don't have to report assets and liabilities if you don't report them to the chief operating officer, and it would just seem stupid to have to do a reconciliation of those if you're not reporting the total amount. And I think that's just, and I understand Sandy's point, but that's a wide, that's a wider issue if you think assets and liabilities have to be reported.
So. Michael, and then Guido.
My point was the same as Charlotte's.
Okay, Guido.
Just one point that I think you are required at least to provide a profit or loss measure under 23. So we cannot say at the beginning if it's reported to the CODM, because at least 28B mandatorily has to be reported to the CODM.
Okay. Notwithstanding Sandy's concern, are there others who object to the proposed amendment? Bernd?
I don't want to object. I just have a question, because this is a converged standard. What is the FASB doing about that? Because if that, or is there nothing they have to do because it's self-explanatory, as you said, anyway, and it's just a minor addition that is not really material?
I don't know. I do not have in mind now US GAAP or the standard, but I think, well, this is consistent with what is in IFRS 8 already. That's the first thing that we are trying to do, maintain consistency among the paragraphs in IFRS 8.
I think your point is well taken. We ought to correspond with the FASB staff. See if they have any objection to this. I can't imagine that they would.
Yeah.
We ought to at least alert Sue Cosper, who is the chairman of their interpretations committee.
At least what I can tell you is that nobody raised that point. Lack of convergence with US GAAP, and I think they would have raised it, don't you think so?
No, I think we ought to make sure. Mm-hmm. So let's send Sue an email. And
US GAAP still requires the measure of access.
Even if it's not presented to the buffer,
I can't remember for certain.
It's a 40 converged standard.
No, IFRS 8 is not fully converged.
That's what BC4 says, that this was 23 was put in to converge with US GAAP.
Yeah, it is 100% same.
Maybe that's right.
Yeah, let's follow up on that. But subject to that, and subject to Sandy's reservation, is there anyone who would object? And obviously, this has to go back up to the board, right? We will inform the board and you all by email if we learn something that surprises us.
Bert is raising this point for this amendment, but on the other amendment we were discussing at the beginning for 10A, that paragraph is not in US GAAP. For example, the 22AA is not in US GAAP.
Well, we ought to include both of them. Mm-hmm. Let's include both of them. We owe them that courtesy.
Sure.
Okay. It will stand then, and we will go to the board with whatever we learn from the FASB. And noting Sandy's objection, I haven't seen any others, so this will go ahead. Okay. Paper 10C. Barbara?
Thank you. Good morning and good